This is Dave Gahary reporting on the corner of Wall and Fraud. The interview I'm about to conduct, Bernard, in nearly all likelihood, should not be occurring. That it is owed solely to the fact that John C. Bogle is a winner. Mr. Bogle overcame fantastic odds to not only survive, but to prosper in a way that many can only dream of. Because of John Bogle and his wonderful story, we, as American investors, are much better off. Mr. Bogle, thank you for taking the time to be with us this morning.
You
were born in New Jersey in the year of the great stock market crash in 1929. Your family's fortunes were wiped out by the impending depression. Your father became a heavy drinker and lost his job, and a few years later separated from your mom. Both your parents died in 1952 at the age of 56. You suffered a major heart attack in 1960 at the age of 30 and would suffer five more serious heart attacks and were not expected to live beyond 40. You felt you wouldn't make it past 50. That you did survive past both of those chronological milestones was attributed by your cardiologist to the John Bogle factor, the will for somebody to overcome, to persevere, that mystical quality that medicine has been very uncomfortable with. You would go on, drive forward, founding what would become the second largest mutual fund company in the world, and create, along the way, the index fund. Are you done, or?
Well, I think that sounds more impressive than it is, but no, I'm not done.
Tell us about the Vanguard experiment.
Well, sure. I started my career in this business in 1951, a firm called Wellington Management Company, a very fine firm. I became head of it in about 1965, and in 1974 got fired. My partners got a little tired of me, and the stock market was in very bad shape, and I wasn't sure what to do, so I decided I would start a company that lived up to all my highest ideals of how this business should be run, and called it Vanguard. And those ideals have to do with very simple investment strategies. Own the entire stock market and hold it forever at very low cost. Do the same thing in the bond market. Asset allocation. Allocate your assets in a simple way, relating to how much wealth you've accumulated or how little, how old you are, how much risk tolerance you have, and how much income you need. Very, very simple rules. And that's the Vanguard investment ideas are the essence of simplicity.
Right. So you weren't happy with the conventional mutual fund industry?
No, I'm far less happy with it now, but it seemed to me there was room for someone to take a different way, and I thought a better way to run this business, and that is run it for the benefit of the shareholders, because what we created in Vanguard was not only those investment ideas, but a truly mutual fund company where the fund shareholders own the management company.
Right.
In this business, the managers make an awful lot of money, and the more money they make, the less the fund investor gets. It's not very complicated. The more the croupiers take out of the gambling casino, the less the gamblers get.
Right.
And that same principle applies in any area of finance.
Right. And I should have mentioned in my introduction that on February 21st, 1996, you had a heart transplant.
Yeah, I'm working on a new heart. I'll soon start the eighth year of my second chance at life. Quite remarkable.
Right. And you said, because it wasn't certain that you were going to survive that, and you said, and this is from your book, Character Counts, which was released, I believe, April of 2002.
Right.
You said that it seemed altogether possible that did Vanguard not exist, no one would have invented it, a rare claim for an enterprise, but in view of the fact that our mutualized structure has yet to be copied, hardly an overstatement. So, in all likelihood, if you didn't, because you did it by yourself, create Vanguard, the company, this type of mutual fund, no one else would have, because no one else cared about the things you cared about.
Right. The typically, in this business as it exists today, we have entrepreneurs come in, and the reason they start a new business, call it a new fund management company, is to make money for themselves. I mean, that's the American way.
Right.
The problem is, when you get into the financial area, Money is a trade-off. The more the managers make, the less the investors get. Not very complicated here. And so I wanted to create something which was designed to serve the shareholder. To serve the shareholder, as I wrote, something we haven't talked about yet, as I wrote in my senior thesis at Princeton University 52 years ago, serve shareholders, in quote from the thesis, the most honest, efficient, and economical way possible, end quote. And 25 years after that, I had the chance to put those ideas into action.
Right. Well, my name is Bernard White. I'm here with Dave Gahary. And I was just wondering about the kinds of things that you invested in. Your model eliminates people who would make profit in the middle. But what about the kinds of things that you would invest in? Did you also, were you selective about them, and what criteria did you use, if so?
That's a good question, and the answer to that is that there are so many people selecting out there that the markets have become highly efficient, and in any event, very few people beat the market in the long run. So my idea was to tie the market before expenses, and therefore I believe that the best strategy for all investors, or certainly a major portion of the best strategy for all investors, is to own the entire stock market, own every single stock in the U.S. stock market, and hold it for Warren Buffett's favorite holding period, which is forever. Don't buy anything, don't sell anything. Just hang on. Buy right and hold tight, as I've told people.
Right, so you're not involved in any socially conscious type funds then?
Well, for example, that Vanguard still runs when I was running it, and when my successors are running it, still runs some managed funds that we have. In general, my standard always was to have those managed funds managed to get the most out of the principles that make indexing work, which is low portfolio turnover, very low cost, very clearly defined objectives and goals. And I have to say that our success in managed funds has been spotty, sometimes pretty good, sometimes not good. And again, this was, I learned in my lifetime that it's very hard to pick good managers. You know, we pick some that were good and some that were not so good. We do happen to have brought out after I left the chairmanship of the firm, a corporate socially responsible so-called fund, and that has not covered itself with any particular glory. It's been an adequate performer, but it's not produced any magic in its short life.
Right. Well, today in the Wall Street Journal, there's a mutual fund section. I don't know if you saw it.
I've not seen it yet.
Well, congratulations, because the Vanguard Healthcare Fund is the 10-year best performer with a 10-year return of 18.67%.
Well, that's a funny story, because I created those specialty funds back in 1985, a long time ago, and we created five or six of them. A little bit against, I mean, I did it, took the responsibility for it, wanted to do it, took the responsibility, and against my better judgment, because investing in sectors, there's a big luck effect there. You don't know quite what's going to happen. What happened was one of those sector funds, that was the healthcare fund, has been a fantastic fund, but the other four are pretty much forgotten.
Right. Now, your company, Vanguard, it's the second largest mutual fund company in the world, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. For the benefit of our listeners, Mr. Bogle, can you explain what exactly an index fund is for them? Because, as you know, most people, if they don't pay close attention to these type of matters, they kind of get intimidated and lost in the stuff.
Sure. Well, an index fund is that when we started the first one here at Vanguard in 1975, an index fund, the first index fund, was based on this. It was a mutual fund who owned the stocks that were held in the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index, owned those 500 stocks and hung on to them, owned them in the proper weight, and therefore tracked the return of the index. And since those stocks account for about 75% of the value of all stocks in America, that's a very good way to track the large capitalization side of the market. We later added a fund which I think is slightly better, but is not apt to do any better or worse over the long run, but is a little more diversified. And that is a total stock market index, right, which owns all the stocks in America. We also have an international stock index fund, which owns all the stocks outside of America, substantially all of them.
So
it's just replicating a sector of the world,
right?
Or because the indexing has gone beyond that kind of completely rational way of proceeding, a somewhat less rational way, because they're indexes of technology stocks,
right,
for example. They're indexes of automobile stocks, I suppose, or telecom stocks, whatever it might
right,
be.
Right, any sector. But what Vanguard is saying is that instead of trying to time the market or pick certain sectors, just go with the stocks that are in a particular index, for example, the Standard & Poor's 500 index, and
or the total stock market,
or the total, and just let it sit there. And in fact, according to your calculations, that does outperform the majority of fund managers who try to pick and choose the market. And
well, it does, because it has to. And let me give your listeners just a little simple mathematical example.
Good.
We know that mutual fund, the annual cost of operating mutual funds, runs something in the general nature of 2.5 percentage points a year. About 1.5% in management fees, and then you've got turnover costs, sales charges, and so on, making up the rest. And so if you think about a stock market that, if we're lucky, might give us, say, something like 10% over the long run, 10% in the stock market, a dollar would grow in 30 years to $18.50, just compound interest, $1, 30 years, 1850.
Okay.
The same number in a mutual fund wouldn't be 10%. It would be 7.5%, because funds cost 2.5%. So $1, 7.5%, $9.25. In the long run, you can see that the investor who owned the market got 100% of the market return, while the investor who owned the mutual fund put up 100% of the capital, took 100% of the risk, and got 50% of the return. And the financial intermediaries, the marketers, the managers, and all that, put up 0% of the capital, took 0% of the risk, and also got 50% of the return.
That's
now, there's no way around this math, because what we know is that all investors, as a group, get the market return. You know, in a 10% market, everybody gets 10% before cost. There's no way around that.
Right.
Everybody is a group. And it turns out that managers don't do any better than individual traders or, you know, unprofessional speculators or whatever it might be. They all come out about the same, because the managers, the professional managers, dominate the daily activity of the market.
Right.
And they cancel each other out. You know, what investors have to realize is some brilliant purchase of some stock at 8 that's going to 60. Well, somebody sold that stock at 8 and didn't see it go to 60.
Right.
Beating the market is a zero-sum game before costs. Beating the market is a loser's game after cost. No way around it, no argument.
And Wall Street as a whole was and is not too happy with you. Isn't that correct?
No, they're not happy, but what they do, it's kind of an interesting thing. Very, very large, very prominent, very respected Wall Street firm. Also, the public pressure to have an index fund is great. So they started one to bring in that money. They didn't like it too much, but they charge 1.5% a year. So they are doomed to lose to the market on their own terms,
right,
by 1.5%.
Right.
People don't like it, but try and find someone that says that my math is incorrect.
Right, and I see you had a little exchange with a journal reporter, Jesse Eisinger.
Yep.
You said that indexers accounted for about 0.4% of stock market volume last year, pretty much to neutralize his argument.
Exactly.
That was amazing, though. That I don't understand why Wall Street wouldn't embrace this. I mean, it is the truth, and people are going to be better off if they just sit back and invest in a Vanguard S&P 500 index fund, and they don't have to worry about the ups and downs. They don't have to worry about all the aggravation.
Well, just think about Wall Street, with every investor in America buying the stock market on January 1st and holding it all year. There's not a single trade in the New York Stock Exchange all year.
Grasso wouldn't like that.
Nobody would like
it.
Because when you think about it, Wall Street is a selling mechanism.
Right.
Wall Street is a wonderful selling mechanism. It is, has a very simple purpose. It is designed to sell securities.
Right.
And that's not illegal. It's not immoral. It's not only not fattening, but it is probably dietetic.
Right. Diuretic.
Something that makes investors thinner.
Right.
But that's responsible as far as it goes. But, you know, it used to be the turnover in the stock exchange was maybe 20% a year. And now it's 100% a year, or very
right.
close to that.
Right.
Whereas we're doing much more thrashing around and spending all those intermediation costs than is worthwhile if you can only understand that the more the croupiers get, the less the gamblers get.
Right, exactly. And does Vanguard have the lowest fee structure?
By far the lowest.
Okay.
Our average management or total expense ratio, we don't charge management fees because we operate at cost.
Right.
Our total so-called expense ratio, expenses as a percentage of our fund assets, are about 0.25%, a little bit higher than that this year, but use 0.25% a year. The average equity fund is about 1.5%, and of course they have high trading costs and we do not. Our lowest cost competitor is probably around 0.75, 0.75%, 0.75%.
Right.
In other words, we're two-thirds lower than the second lowest firm. It's a cost advantage.
Wow.
That's unbelievable.
Wow. And you you started out with only a couple of million dollars when you first created Vanguard in 1974, and in 1996 you had $180 billion under management. Right after the terrorist attacks, you had $562 billion under management, which accounted for 8.4% of all the money in mutual funds. You know where it stands right now?
Yeah, we're probably about $560 billion, $550 or $60
billion. Okay. Now, I forgot to mention earlier that you also, in May of 1970, dined at the White House with Richard Nixon, along with 35 other business leaders, and that was an interesting story. And you are involved in right now, and this isn't a governmental organization, the Conference Board, but you are involved in cleaning up the corporate greed that has infected America as of late.
Yeah, I'm one of the commissioners of the Conference Board Commission on Public Trust and Private Enterprise, with people like former SEC Chairman Leavitt, former Federal Reserve Chairman Volcker, former Senator Warren Rudman. It's a small former Commerce Secretary Pete Peterson is
right.
the chairman, one of the chairmen. John Snow, the Treasury Department Secretary Designate, is our other co-chairman. So it's a very good group of people, fairly small. I don't think there are maybe 10 of us.
Actually, 12. It's
12.
The Commission on Public Trust and Private Enterprise, which was convened by the Conference Board.
Right.
And you are going to meet this Thursday here in New York.
We are. We're going to have a press conference on Thursday.
Right, at the Council on Foreign Relations.
Right.
Oh, I should have said that you're in Malvern, Pennsylvania right now at Vanguard headquarters.
Yeah, we like to say Valley Forge, and it looks like it's a little snow hat down here. It's a beautiful winter wonderland, kind of. I can't imagine being one of Washington's troops in the among Washington
right.
troops in the winter of
they actually had to cancel that
77-78.
They had to cancel that one this year.
But I'm sure those were indeed the times that tried men's souls.
Hmm. How are you going to carry out your responsibilities in terms of exposing some of these folks, or is that what you're charged with?
Well, what we're charged with at the Conference Board Commission is to set standards in three areas where these are self-charged, but we decided to divide up the areas that we thought needed great attention from corporate America, if you will, number one, compensation, which involves accounting for stock options, compensation committees that have been intimidated by chief executives, compensation system very, very flawed, and acting in the complete detriment of the interest of the public shareholders of companies. And that report we brought out in October, a very tough report on compensation, saying options should be expensed. Seems obvious, but someone's got to stand up and say it, because the cost of stock options has been hidden from our eyes
right.
and has gotten completely out of hand.
And, of course, there's a dissenter on the board there.
We have a dissenter in Andy Grove,
right.
the chairman of Intel, a very respected, responsible man, But on the other hand, I align myself with the other dissenter who said we should have gone even further, and that's Fed Chairman Volcker.
Right.
So, this, our second two areas of study are just about complete. We'll be reporting on them on Thursday, and they will be, number one, the whole issue of corporate governance, the organization of boards, the responsibilities of directors, support directors may need, and is number two in our three-point list, and number three is accounting standards, and we'll have a good, strong report on that as well. Both of them will be out on this Thursday.
Right. You said the commission shares, well, you didn't say, but the commission did, and it was you. The commission shares the public's anger over excessive executive compensation,
mm-hmm.
especially to executives of failed or failing companies. You know, people really are angry. I mean, you have this footnote here that S&P data shows that in 1992, median CEO total compensation was $1.8 million. However, by 2000, that's 8 years later, it had reached $6.1 million. A Business Week article showed CEO compensation rose 340% versus a 36% rise in the compensation of rank-and-file employees over a 10-year period. Is something going to be done about this, you think?
Well, sooner or later, and that's a really an interesting question, who should be doing something about it? You know, it's very hard for the federal government to do much. We are, in Sarbanes-Oxley bill, taking some important steps, very important steps, to punish wrongdoers and to set up oversight over the accounting profession, which has failed us very badly. But who should really be doing it? Because the government can't do anything, can't do everything, and shouldn't do everything.
Right.
You know, they're going to botch it up. That's what governments often do.
Right.
The owners of the corporation should be doing something. But they have stood by in this bubble, this boom, and this bust, in this mania, and done virtually nothing.
Right.
And those owners are the large financial institutions of this great nation.
Right.
The largest 100 of them own over 50% of all the stock. Imagine a 50% stockholder saying, in effect, implicitly, I don't pay much attention to this, and I don't care. It's not worth my time.
Right.
So we've got to get the owners involved, and
right.
that's going to be some real task.
That's almost impossible, I would
Well,
say.
Yeah. And we'll keep working on them.
Well, I hope so. You know, you mentioned in our phone conversation on Friday that most people are concerned about corporate ethics, what we're just talking about, whether they own the right mutual fund. And, of course, Arthur Levitt, he recommended in his book and on the program here that people should buy an index fund like Vanguard.
Mm-hmm.
And the stock market's future. What's going to happen with the stock market?
Well, of course, nobody knows what's going to happen to the stock market, and anyone that says they do is talking through their hat. But I think we can make some reasonable assumptions that stocks will do better than bonds, which is really the only other... you're not going to make very much in a savings account or in a money market fund, so we have to look at the two other asset categories if we're going to do any... They can provide for a good retirement or all the other purposes people have for investing. And I think it's reasonable to assume that stocks will do better than bonds
right.
over the next 10 years. And I say that not with some speculative idea that I know, but rather that stocks depend in the long run on their economics, their investment returns, their dividend yields, plus their earnings growth is what determines the investment returns on stocks. And we're looking at a 2% yield. I think stock earnings should grow in the range of 6% a year. I can't guarantee that, but that's about what America should be growing at before you adjust for inflation. And that would give you an 8% return, investment return on stocks. The other part of stocks, which is stock returns, is not economic returns or investment returns, but what I call emotional returns or speculative returns. And that's how much people will pay for a dollar of those earnings I spoke about.
Right. So if they go into the Vanguard S&P 500 index fund, put their money in, sit back, don't sweat it, it's going to come back.
Well, it should. Now, the one thing, I just want to say a word about the emotional side. The bull market that we had, this great bull market, this great bubble, was built on the willingness of people to pay not $8 for a dollar of earnings, as they did in 1982, but $32 for a dollar of earnings, as they did in the third quarter of 2000. So that means a 400% gain just because people were speculating.
And
that's not going to happen
again. They've been doing that forever. Mr. Bogle, can we have you back?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm delighted to do it.
I really want to thank you for stopping by. And Mr. John Bogle, the founder of Vanguard Funds, the creator of index funds, among many other things. I'm glad that you're with us today, Mr. Bogle.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and I'm also glad to just be here.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Thanks so much.
Good.